chapter 14, verse 5, or from 3 to 5, they receive the false God into their heart, and the false God alienates the true God. So today, if there is anything more important than the true God in our life, our relationship with God cannot be intimate. Because this is a marital relationship. And chapter 14, verse 9 to 11. Let's see the time. And if the prophet is enticed to utter prophecy, I, the Lord, have enticed that prophet and will stretch out my hand against him and destroy him from among my people Israel. Verse 10, they will bear their guilt. The prophet will be guilty as the one who consult him. Verse 11, and then the people of Israel will no longer stray from me, nor will they defile themselves anymore with all their sins. They will be my people, and I will be their God, declared the sovereign Lord. So this passage very clearly indicates that the false prophet will be eliminated, so that the Israelite will not went astray, will not go astray. So the downfall of the faith of Israelite had to do a lot with the false prophet. And verse 9 says, if the prophet is enticed to utter a prophecy, I, the Lord, have enticed that prophet, which means God allowed the other spirit to entice that prophet. You can refer to 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 23. 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 23. Start from verse 21. Okay. Finally, a spirit came forward, stood before the Lord, and said, I will entice him. Verse 22. By what means? The Lord asked. I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophet, he said. He will succeed in enticing him, said the Lord. Go and do it. Verse 23. So now the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these prophets of yours. The Lord has decreed disaster for you. So these verses mention that God allowed the lying spirit to entice the prophet. So the prophet will give a false prophecy to lead the people of God astray. God allowed it happen so that God can cut off, that God can eliminate the false prophet, so that Israelites will never be enticed to go astray. So we have to understand in this world that there are a lot of false prophets. That's what we mentioned in the New Testament time, the meaning of prophecy most often related to preaching. We are filled by the Holy Spirit. We read the Bible thoroughly in depth. and we were able to understand the will of God more than anybody else. So when we preach the words of God, it's brand the will of God. We are doing the work of prophet. Other than this, if anyone try to prophesy something is going to happen in the future, and that prophecy always is false, and that prophet is always a false prophet. So in the New Testament time, we have to be very cautious about the so-called prophet. If anyone claim themselves to be the prophet, we have to be very cautious. Because nowadays, the so-called prophet will function differently from the prophet in the Old Testament. Okay. So you can see a lot of preaching in the TV. You can see a lot of preaching in the TV, in the Sunday, worshiping from the TV. You don't have to go to church. You turn on the TV, you are able to attend the service, right? Even in the Garden Grove, there's a very beautiful chapel called Crystal Cathedral. And you know, right? That chapel was very beautiful, and the wall was able to open and push it out, and you are able to see the sky, the moon, and the star. And that preacher was very famous. He preached the positive thinking of the Bible. He did not preach about salvation. Positive thinking in the Bible. So every Sunday when he preached, the sermon was delivered in live broadcast all over the world and attracted a lot of people. And he did not talk about salvation. And a lot of people was attracted by him. And a lot of different so-called prophets. One day about, I think, 1995 or 96, I saw a van drive very fast passing me in Southern California. And that van written in English as well as in Korean language. In 1995, the end of 95, October or something, it will be the end of the world. So that church did really preach a particular day and particular hour, there will be the end of the world. So the member was waiting for the second coming of Jesus Christ in Los Angeles as well as in Korea, South Korea, Seoul. But when they wait until midnight, nothing happened. They called the pastor, and the pastor said, "You must wait patiently, but until the daybreak, nothing happened." And they told some of the members commit suicide. Why? Because the pastor prophesied that Jesus' second coming on a certain day. So according to Matthew chapter 24, woe to those who are pregnant, right? Some of the sisters who are pregnant to get abortion. And some of the sisters who have very good job, or member have very good job, they quit the job. And some have another property, and they sold the property and donate the money to the church. So they are preparing the second coming of Jesus Christ. But Jesus did not come. So what did they do? They already quit the job. They already get abortion. And they already sold their property. And then the government arrested their pastor in South Korea. And that pastor was convicted of crime. While everybody was selling the property, the pastor purchased a lot of building with a very low price. So we have to be very cautious. If anybody considers themselves as a prophet, we have to discern. Do not easily believe anybody. So in the last days, there were people who is coming to proclaim themselves the prophet. Even they were able to perform the great miracles. So to identify whether this is prophet or not, according to what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 to 7, you have to look into their fruit. The fruit they bear will tell you the life inside them. The life is invisible, but the fruit is visible. So usually a so-called false prophet. You can identify the false prophet by three things. One is what? Money. The second is object sex. And the third one is position. Okay? From these three aspects, you are able to identify. The false prophet always promote themselves higher than anybody else. You know, there is a church called Unification Church. You know it, right? The founder was Moon. And the headquarters was in New York. One day, a sister told me that he went to that headquarters to do some work. As soon as he entered the headquarters, he saw the very huge portrait of the founder, Mr. Moon. And immediately he discovered this church is something wrong. Because if this church really worships Jesus, and the founder were not supposed to put their portrait in the entrance of the building. No. And a few years ago, you see that there was a TV evangelist was convicted. Why? Because he runs the TV program like an enterprise. And his life is so luxurious, even his stock has air condition. Alright. So actually he took away a lot of money. And he drove the Rolls Royce, a very wonderful car. And not mention a lot of so-called profit involved with sexual immorality. So we can identify whether this is a false prophet by the way they live their life. The other way is to identify the person by the truth they preach. If you open the Bible, they preach exactly the same with our preaching. And this is not a false prophet. But if their preaching is not in accordance with the teaching of the Bible, then very possibly this is a false prophet. So, in the time of Ezekiel, there were false prophets to entice people gone astray from the righteous path. Nowadays, there will be the false prophet too. We have to be very cautious. Okay. And then, chapter 14, verse 12 to verse 23, to the end. Ezekiel chapter 14, verse 12, to the end. The judgment is inescapable, since they defile themselves with sin without repentance. Then the judgment is coming. God's retribution is coming. And God is going to punish them with four different kind of disaster. Verse 21, chapter 14, verse 21. And for this is what sovereign Lord said. How much worse will it be when I send against Jerusalem my four dreadful judgment: sword, famine, wild beast, and plague. So these are the four judgment come to them. They are going to suffer from the sword, from famine, and from wild beast, and from plague. Sword, you know, right? People kill people, fighting each other. Famine means you have nothing to eat. And wild beast commonly interpreted as the foreign army without humanity. They come and startle them like a wild beast, beaten the human being, and the plague, pestilence, contagious disease. And why does God allow this happen? You see the verse 22 and 23. Verse 22 and 23. Yet there will be some survival, sons and daughters who will be brought out of it, and they will come to you. And when you see their conduct and their action, you will be consoled regarding the disaster I have brought upon Jerusalem. Every disaster I have brought upon them. How come when you see them, you will be consoled? Because when you see their action, the way they live their life, you're going to find out that they deserve this kind of punishment because their life is so wicked, sin against God so much. Verse 23, you will be consoled when you see their conduct and their action. For you will know that I have done nothing in it without cause, declare the sovereign Lord. God will not done nothing without a cause, which means God do everything with a reason. It's very important, huh? So when we suffer, the most important thing we have to think about is, why did God allow the suffering come to me? What does God want me to learn? This is the most important thing. So suffering always attached with a meaning from God. So if we endure suffering and we are able to learn something out of the suffering, then the suffering becomes meaningful. The suffering becomes stepping stone of our spiritual advancement. So in the book of James chapter 1, let's see James chapter 1. James chapter 1 verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brother, when you face trial of many kinds. Verse 3. Because you know that the testing of your faith develop perseverance. Verse 4. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete. This is exactly the goal of our spiritual pursuit. To be mature and complete, not lacking anything. This is the goal. This is the objective of our spiritual pursuit. And how can we achieve that objective? One of very effective way is go through trial or suffering. So verse 5 says, if any of you lack wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So verse 1 to verse 4 talk about trial and suffering. And then verse 5 talk about if anyone lack wisdom, you can ask God, and he is going to give you generously. Why James tried to put the wisdom just immediately after the tribulation and trial? Because he wants everybody to have spiritual wisdom to know why God allowed this happen. God will do anything with a reason. God will not do anything without reason. So anything happen to us, we need to pray to God, please let me know, what do you want me to learn? Now, this is very, very important. We always heard a lot of testimony. When the members suffer, they pray, God reveal His will to them, and after the suffering, they become even more holy, and their deeds become more complete. And this is the blessing of God. So suffering, of course, you have to pay a price, but this is a very effective way to shorten our spiritual pursuit. Okay, so now, verse 14. Ezekiel chapter 14, verse 14. Before the tribulation come, there were some people who were able to save themselves from the tribulation. Verse 14. And even if these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, when in it, they will save only themselves by their righteousness, declared the Lord Almighty. Okay, verse 16. 15. Or if I send the wild beast through that country and they leave it children childless and it become desolate, so that no one can pass through it because of the beast. 16. As surely as I live, declare the sovereign Lord, even if these three men were in it, they could not save their own son or daughters. They alone would be saved, but the land would be desolate. So while the tribulation come, only Noah, Daniel, and Job will be able to be saved because of their own righteousness. So in the last day of Jesus' second coming, the bridegroom has to put on the white garment, and that white garment is the righteousness of saints. So in the last days, we can be saved because of our righteous life, our sinful life, sinless life. We keep ourselves holy. So it's very important now. It's very important. The holiness has the benefit in this life and the life to come. If we keep ourselves holy, God is holy, there will be no hindrance between man and God. And your prayer will reach God with no hindrance. If we have sinned, there will be a cloud disturb our relationship with God. When you pray, your prayer cannot penetrate that sin and reach God. And God's grace cannot penetrate that cloud and reach to you like a sunshine, reach to you. So live a life without sin is critical important as a Christian. So this is chapter 14. And chapter 15. Chapter 15 mentioned that Jerusalem is a useless vine. Verse 1. The words of the Lord come to me, too. Son of man, how is the root of the vine better than that of branch or on any of the trees in forest? Verse 3. Is wood ever taken from it to make anything useful? Do they make pegs from it to hang things on? 4. And after it is thrown into the fire as a fuel, and the fire burns both ends and charred the middle, is it then useful for anything? Verse 5. If it is not useful for anything, when it was whole, how much less can it be made into something useful when the fire has burned it and it is charred? So he talk about Jerusalem like a piece of wood been burned both sides and in the middle. And after Jerusalem been burned and become useless, and Jerusalem become desolated and become useless. And why God allowed this happen? Verse 7. And I will set my face against them, although they have come out of the fire. The fire will yet consume them. And when I set my face against them, you will know that I am the Lord. I will make the land desolate because they have been unfaithful, declared the sovereign Lord. So they are reaping whatever they have sown. So they live a sinful life and they reap the disaster, the desolation of the Jerusalem. So this is chapter 15. Now chapter 16. Chapter 16 is a very interesting story about unfaithful Jerusalem, like a female betrothed to a bridegroom. So chapter 16 talk about the unfaithfulness of Jerusalem. And the first first five chapter, the first five verses, is talk about Jerusalem actually coming from a very humble non-Israelite origin. You remember, right? When Abraham fight with the five kings, and he came back, and then who give him tithe? Who give him offering? King of Hadishida, and he had it from Salom, right? Yeah, and that is a commonly believed Jerusalem. And later on, in Joshua 15:63, you can see it's mixed. Joshua 15, verse 63. Joshua 15, verse 63. Judah could not dislodge the Jebusites who were living in Jerusalem. To this day, the Jebusites live there with the people of Judah. So until the time of Joshua, the pagan lived together with Judah in Jerusalem. So it's come from a very humble beginning, humble origin. But the city was not overcome until the King David. Let's see 2 Samuel chapter 5. 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 6. The king and his men marched to Jerusalem to attack the Jebusites who live there. And Jebusites said to David, "You will not get in here, even the blind and the lame can wall you off." And they thought David cannot get in there. Nevertheless, David captured the fortress of Zion, the city of David. So God helped David. So David overcome the people of Jebusite and dislodged them and driven them out of Jerusalem. So from that time on, Jerusalem became the city of David and become the city where Jerusalem and Solomon built a holy temple. So start from that on, Jerusalem considered a holy city. Because of what? Because God has shown favor to them. So they were able to drop out the other tribe of people. Okay. So chapter 16, verse 6 to verse 15 is talk about the process. How did God show mercy to them? Originally, they were like a newborn baby being abandoned in the roadside, waiting to die. And then God treasured them. So God passing by that newborn baby, and God take care of the newborn baby, and gradually the newborn baby grown up like an adult. He's talking about Jerusalem. Under the blessing of God, gradually developed, become a huge city, glorious city, with majesty. And then God make a covenant with Jerusalem, like a bridegroom make a covenant with the bride. That's verse 8. Chapter 16, verse 8. Later on, I passed by when I looked at you and saw that you were older enough for love. I spread the corner of my garment over you. Spread the corner of my garment over you is what had been done in which book? The book of Ruth, right? Ruth obeyed the suggestion of Naomi. So in the day of harvest, she went secretly to the field of who? Boaz. While Boaz was living and Ruth went there and just slept beside Boaz. And you said just like what here mentioned, use a cloth to cover herself. So verse 8, and garment to cover you, your nakedness. I give you my solemn oath and enter into the covenant with you, declare the sovereign law, and you become mine. What does it mean, you become mine? This become a spiritual marital covenant. So Jerusalem belonged to God, because God brought them up, and God blessed Jerusalem. Since Jerusalem belonged to God, so God required Jerusalem to be faithful to himself. And now we look into verse 14. And your fame spread among the nations on account of your beauty. Because the splendor I have given you make you beautiful, make your beauty perfect, declare the sovereign Lord. So Jerusalem, especially in the era of David, in the time of King David, Jerusalem became very famous. David and Solomon. So the fame spread to all the surrounding country. Almost all the surrounding country contribute a lot of material, try to make a political alliance with David and Solomon. So that kind of beauty actually because of God's blessing. However, when a person reach to the climax of God's blessing, always that was the most dangerous point of your spiritual life. So verse 15, but you trusted in your beauty and used your fame to become prostitute. Her husband is supposed to be God. But right now she become prostitute. So what does that mean, become prostitute? Become prostitute means Jerusalem tried to make alliance with Egypt and Assyria and later on Babylon. Now you see chapter 16 verse 26. You engage in prostitution with the Egyptian in your lustful neighborhood, and provoke me to anger with your increasing promiscuity. Verse 27. So I stretch out my hand against you and reduce your territory. And then verse 28. And you engage in prostitution with Assyria too. How can Jerusalem city engage in prostitution? As Jerusalem is supposed to worship God because the temple of God was there. They are supposed to rely on God, and God is going to deliver his people out of the invasion of foreign nations. However, they did not resolve their difficulty in that way. They tried to make a political alliance with the nation who worshiped the idol, Egyptian as well as Assyrian, and which is unfaithful to the one living God. So this is the first one, talk about the prostitution. And the second prostitution is from 17, verse 17 to verse 21. It's talk about they turn to worship the idol. So verse 17 is an indictment of God about their sin, the sin they have committed. You also took the fine jewelry I gave to you. So the fine jewelry is me. The bridegroom give to the bride. And you took the fine jewelry, the jewelry made of my gold and silver, and you make yourself a male idol and engage in prostitution with them. So they use the blessing of God to make an idol and worship idol. If you were God, what are you going to do? Sometimes I think about this question. If you were God, what are you going to do with the people in the world? I believe that the world will be destroyed a long time ago. All right? You see that a lot of ants come into your home. What did you do? Right? You kill all of them. Why? Because you don't like it. Everyone thinks, this is my home. How can you come into my home without permission? Right? You show no respect to me. So I kill you. You have nothing to say. Right? When God looked down from heaven to the earth, the life we have is from God. The food we have is from God. Everything we have is from God. If we go to worship idol, this is the God. This is the God, give me everything. The true God, the God in heaven. How angry he will be. So God was so angry because the people in Jerusalem worship the idol. And verse 33. 32 and 33. Okay. You, adulterous wife, you prefer stranger to your husband. So they try to be intimate with the stranger, Egyptian and Assyrian. And they did not want to be intimate with the husband, which means the only true God. So they played prostitution. Verse 33. This is a very vivid description of the sin they committed. Every prostitute received a fee. So at that time they go for prostitution, they have to pay a fee. But you give gift to all your lover. So on the other hand, on the contrary, they have to bribe somebody to have prostitution with Jerusalem. Right? So it's something very strange. Very, very strange. In the eyes of God. This is very strange. It's difficult to understand why the chosen people did in this way, to sin against God. And there was one reason. Verse 30. Verse 30 is the reason. Verse 30. How weak will you are, declare the sovereign Lord, when you do all these things, acting like a brazen prostitute. So when you live a life unfaithful to God, actually because of your weak will, how weak will you are, because of your weakness. So you were not able to stand firm against the temptation of worshiping the idol, against a foreign country, foreign culture of worshiping the idol, because of your weakness. So you engage in prostitution spiritually. So today is the same. It's the same. Why we are unfaithful to God? Because we are weak spiritually. So some people are strong-willed in doing worldly business, but they are what? Weak-willed in pursuing spiritual advancement. So some board member commented, some of the church member, what? Strong in opinion and weak in faith. So I always think about this very interesting comment. Strong in opinion, when there's a meeting, always this and that, speak aloud, right? And weak in faith. What do you mean weak in faith? When you encourage them to pray, prayer is too long. Right? When you encourage them to come earlier and do something for the church, it's too early, I cannot get up. And after the service, why not stay a little bit long? I have to clean up. I have something to do. I have an appointment. They are strong in opinion. Criticize this, criticize that. Suggest this, suggest that. But weak in faith. Really, we should reverse our spiritual condition. So we will never follow the footsteps of Jerusalem. So this is chapter 16. Jerusalem engaged in prostitution. And chapter 16 continued from 35 until 43, it talks about the impending judgment of their prostitution. Since they sin against God in spiritual prostitution without repentance, what will God treat them? Verse 42. Then my wrath against you will subside, and my jealous anger will turn away from you. I will come and no longer angry. And after God has poured out his wrath upon Jerusalem in verse 41, a foreign nation is going to attack them, use a stone to stone them to death, and to kill them, to burn them. And what is going to happen? Then God is going to cease his anger. And God is going to forgive them. So this is the mercy of God. Okay. And 44, chapter 16, verse 44, to the end. It's talking about the sin committed at Jerusalem. Is similar to her sister Samaria, and even more serious than Sodom. Okay, verse 44. Okay. Everyone who quotes Proverbs will quote the proverb about you. Like the mother, like the daughter. 45. You are a true daughter of your mother, who despised her husband and her children. And you are a true sister of your sisters, who despised your husband and your children. Your mother was a Hittite, and your father was an Amorite. Now, so Jerusalem comes from a very humble non-Israelite origin. And your older sister was a Samaria who lived to the north of you with her daughter. And your young sister who lived in the south of you with her daughter was Sodom. Okay. And you not only walk in their ways and copy their detestable practices, but in all your ways you soon become more depraved than they. So as surely as I live, declare the sovereign Lord, your sister Sodom and your daughter and her daughter never did what you and your daughter have done. So this is accusation of God that Jerusalem had done something more wicked than Sodom and the surrounding area of Sodom. Okay, and verse 49 talk about the sin of the Sodom. The sin of the Sodom mentioned here is social injustice. So 49. Now it was the sin of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter were arrogant, overfed, and unconcerned. They did not help the poor and the needy. Verse 50. They were haughty and did detestable things before me. So city of Sodom not only engaged in sexual promiscuity, and also the city of Sodom engaged in social injustice. So that's the reason God disliked them. So verse 15. They were haughty and did detestable things before me. And then verse 51 talk about Samaria, even did not commit half of your sin. So verse 59. See verse 58. Verse 16, you will bear the consequence of your wilderness and your distasteful practices, declare the law. You will bear the consequence. This is a very important sentence. You will bear the consequence. So there's a law of retribution. If we do the righteous deed, we do something righteous, we will be rewarded. But if we do the sinful deeds, and we will bear the consequence. So everybody is going to be held accountable, no exception. Verse 59. This is what the sovereign Lord say: I will deal with you as you deserve, because you have despised my oath by breaking the covenant. So breaking the covenant is very serious sin in the eyes of God. They are double meaning. The first is literal meaning. When you engage with somebody, remember, one day you will have engagement, right? And you will ask the church minister to help you. When the engagement, we hold the engaging ceremony in the name of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is in the witness of that engagement. You cannot say, oh, I look at you, I don't like you, I just break up. Jesus Christ was a witness. How can you break up that kind of engagement? More serious is a marriage. When you hold a wedding matrimony in the church, the most important thing is you make a covenant before God. And there are so many people witness your wedding, same with the angel and God. So the people bless you. And later on you divorce. If anybody divorce, break that covenant, God will hold them accountable. This is literal meaning. Spiritual meaning means after you are baptism, you are already in the marital covenant with God. If we break the covenant, means we don't believe in Jesus anymore, or we commit sin, unfaithful to God, in the final judgment, our sin will be more serious than those who are not baptized. So we should not easily, to encourage people to be baptized. We have to make sure the people really understand what they believe. And the people really are waiting to pay a price to hold fast their belief. If we too easily to push a person to be baptized, and then the person cannot continue the spiritual journey, and that consequence will be more serious than those who never baptized. Verse 60. Verse 60. Yet I will remember the covenant I make with you in the days of your youth, and I will establish an everlasting covenant with you. So God is a faithful God. Even though Jerusalem was unfaithful to God, but God still faithful to them. God still waiting them to return and to come back to Him. So verse 62. So I will establish my covenant with you, and you will know that I am the Lord. Then when I make atonement for you, for all you have done, you will remember and be ashamed, and never again open your mouth because your humiliation, declares the sovereign Lord. So this is the promise of God. He promised he is going to keep the covenant. He is going to be faithful to the unfaithful Jerusalem. And he is waiting the Jerusalem to return and to turn back to him. So this is chapter 16. Chapter 17. Now there is another parable. Talk about two eagles and a vine. Two eagles and a vine. This is a riddle. A parable or a riddle. without explanation, it's very difficult for us to understand. Verse 3. Says then, this is what the sovereign Lord says. A great eagle with powerful wind, long feathers, and full plumage of various color came to Lebanon, and taking hold of the top of the cedar, verse 4, and broke off its topmost shoot, and carried it away to a land of merchant, where he planted it in the city of trader. So what does this really mean? If you look into 2 Kings chapter 24, verse 12, 2 Kings chapter 24, verse 12. Okay. He'll talk about Babylon sending a mighty army to Jerusalem, right? And what did Babylon do? Verse 12. Joachim, the king of Judah, surrendered Babylon. And then in verse 17, and the king of Babylon installed the relative of Joachim to be the king, and changed his name to Hezekiah, right? And Hezekiah was carried to Babylon to become a king. Okay. Yeah. So this is the first parable. A mighty eagle break the shoot of the cedar. We need to bring the king into Babylon. And the king of Judah survived in Babylon. And later on, you can see chapter 17, verse 7. There's another very mighty eagle, right? And come. And this branch of the shoot just turned towards this side, the second eagle side. So what does that mean? This king being installed by Babylon later on betrayed Babylon and seeking for alliance with the Egypt. So betrayed Babylon. So later on the Babylon just attack the country and ruin them. So this is the parable of chapter 17, the two eagle and the branch, a shoot of the tree of cedar. Chapter 17, verse 17. This is the explanation. Pharaoh with his mighty army and great horde will be of no help to him in war when ramps are built and siege works erected to destroy many lives. He despised the oath by breaking the covenant because he had given his hand in pledge and yet did all these things. He shall not escape. So he is going to be responsible for his betrayal of Babylon. And then on, he will be captured and be killed. And all his army will be killed, and the remnant will disperse everywhere. Okay. And chapter 17, verse 22, this is a prophecy of the coming of Messiah. So this is going to the spiritual aspect. This is what the sovereign Lord said: I myself will take a shoot from the very top of the cedar and plant it. I will break off a tender spring from the topmost shoot and plant it in the high and lofty mountain on the mountain high of Israel, I will plant it and will produce branches and bear fruit and become splendor cedar. He's talking about the coming of God's kingdom. And according to the book of Isaiah, and that shoot on top of the tree of cedar actually referring to Jesus Christ. So this is a prophecy from chapter 17, verse 22 to the end. So this is a messianic promise. Shall we read Isaiah chapter 53? We start from chapter 11 first. Isaiah chapter 11 verse 1. Chapter 11 verse 1. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his root, a branch will bear the fruit. And we know, verse 2. And the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. The Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of power, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. Actually, this paragraph is talking about the coming of Jesus Christ. It's like a shoot come up from the stump of Jesse. So Jesus Christ is the offspring of Jesse. And same with chapter 53, Isaiah chapter 53, verse 2. And he grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of the dry ground. The whole chapter is talking about Jesus Christ. And chapter 18 talk about three generations. How did God treat the three generations? It's very interesting. The grandpa generation did the righteous deeds, and God blessed them. The father generation turned to the wickedness, and God destroyed that generation. And the grandson generation fear God and turn away from the evil and live a righteous life, and God did not punish the third generation. So this is the principle of God's judgment. Everyone will be held accountable according to their own deeds. So God will not hold anyone accountable because of their father generation's deeds or their children's generation's deeds. Everyone is accountable for their own deeds. This is the main point of chapter 18. Tomorrow we are going to continue chapter 18. So tomorrow we have three sections. We hope we can cover from 18 to at least to 35. Okay. So until chapter 24, it talk about the judgment to the chosen people, the Israelites. And from chapter 25 onwards, is the judgment of the foreign nation. So chapter 25 onwards, we can go a little bit faster. We are hoping we can study chapter 35 tomorrow.